Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Yeah. We all love the Gospels. We all love Paul's letters. You get to Revelation, that gets a little confusing. And then the Old Testament, you're like, oh, man. Well, maybe not you, but a lot of Christians struggle with the Old Testament, whether it's kind of all the minutiae or just the fact that it's, we're a couple thousand years removed from that at least. And then you got all the kingdom stuff, and you got judges, and you got blood and guts and all these crazy things going on. And this kingdom comes up, and then it goes down in the Babylonian captivity and all this stuff. And then the kind of like endless genealogies, and then let's talk about geography. And where's this particular tribe going to go, and what borders the north end and the south end and the east and the west? And you're sitting there going, what does this have to do with my life as a New Testament Christian in 2018? I think that's a valid question. And a lot of people do struggle with the Old Testament. I've been struggling through it myself this year. I've been going through kind of the Bible in a year. I'm doing an audio version of that. And every once in a while, yes, even yours truly, the host of a live talk radio show on Christian radio, will like skip that chapter, fast forward a little bit. I don't need to hear all this genealogy again. I don't know why it matters. And I just keep going. And it's sometimes it's tough to get into the Old Testament, but there is a lot of fruit there if you have a proper understanding of it. So today, somebody that's actually, believe it or not, he's actually totally in the Old Testament. He's working on his PhD in Old Testament studies here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He has either the incredible blessing or the incredible burden of being Danny Aiken's intern. We are actually, now you get to fill in. That's part of the deal. So Devin Mankata's here, and he's like the guy I was just talking about, but I don't know if are you getting thrown under the bus because you have to fill in for Danny Aiken, or is that a good thing? Does it even faze you?
No, doesn't faze me at all.
Doesn't faze you at all.
It's basically whatever he wants me to do, I just go and do it.
Yeah, sounds like a normal intern.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, what's that like though? You're a PhD student, you got your MDiv, and now you're the intern for the president of the seminary. Was it awkward at all? Is there like a little pressure there? Like he's checking your grades once and twice? And what's that like?
No, it's good because I don't take any classes with him, so I'm in a different department, and it's way better than what I was doing, which was selling containers for a corporate company. So it's great.
That's cool. And so you're working towards your PhD in Old Testament studies. How'd you end up here at Southeastern?
Yeah, so me and my wife are from Louisiana. I went to a school in Louisiana called Louisiana College, and the PhD director of Southeastern and my original Hebrew professor are both now professors here at Southeastern. So they were in Louisiana College. They left. They're here at Southeastern, and so I basically just followed them up.
Did you follow them, or did they say, hey, Devin, you should get up here?
No, I followed them. It's basically I knew that this was going to be a great school already, and then having them here, wanting to do Old Testaments, just basically keeping on track with my original Hebrew professor.
So how old were you when you became a follower of Christ?
So I was around 8.
Okay, so how common is it for you amongst your friends since you were 8? How old are you now?
I'm 28.
Okay, so 20 years. How often do you run into another Christian that's as juiced about the Old Testament as you are?
Outside of Southeastern?
Outside of the seminary.
Outside of the seminary, not as much. I mean, it's really just kind of, what do we do with this? I don't really understand. And you usually get kind of weird looks about, okay, wow, Old Testament, that doesn't really, that's kind of weird. So
yeah, so what started that for you?
So when I came into college, I didn't really read the Old Testament, didn't really know what it was about. And then I sat in my first Old Testament introduction class. And it was the first time it made sense. So my professor, Dr. Michael Shepherd, he taught, and I was like, wow, like this is great. Like this is a lot of good stuff in here. This might be understandable at some point. And so so then I just kept pursuing in there class after class after class, reading more, and then just realizing, man, this is so profitable for the church. But we don't read it as much because it is hard. And so then wanting to say, I want to help do what my professor did for me. And so that's really why I kept kind of going on that journey.
So if you could generalize where he got you to, because before you're sitting there, like most people, I think, including myself sometimes, going, all right, now why am I studying this? Why am I spending time in the Old Testament? If you could generalize what happened during that semester, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it was really kind of like, it's like when you go swimming and you're not very comfortable with it, it's like, oh, I'm not going to go swimming because I'm not a good swimmer. But then if you have someone there who can be like, okay, actually, this is not so bad. Let me give you a little help along the way and point you out to some, give you some anchors. And the actual anchors aren't good, very good for swimming, but just kind of give you some help and some boundary points. Then you can realize, oh, I think this is actually, I think I can manage this on my own now. And just kind of pointing out, just kind of settling in there. I think just spending time, even through the difficulty, and just having kind of someone guide you along the way was really helpful.
So was it, and like Danny teaches an incredible Herman Hoos class here at Southeastern Baptist, which you can also take online, by the way. So if you guys want to check that out, the hermeneutics is just really how to properly study the Bible, to consider it contextually, to consider the type of writing that you're reading. Is this Proverbs? Is it wisdom literature? Is it narrative? What am I reading here? And you can actually take that online for free. That's one of the online classes that are free here. Just go to sebts.edu/radio. That's going to land you on a page where you can see everything that you can access online at Southeastern. But was that part of it that, okay, there's actually a way to study these various parts of the Old Testament? And then relevancy, was that a big deal too? Like, what does this matter to a New Testament Christian?
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly right. I think it's whenever you kind of, you know, we have some of the familiar stories like Abraham and Isaac, you know, you have the Joseph narrative, but then realizing, okay, what do we actually do with these stories? And then how do these stories relate to the overall picture of the Old Testament? I think that was really helpful to see, okay, we have all these different pieces, kind of like in the New Testament, you have the Gospels, you have the letters, and then the Old Testament, okay, now we have stories and we have Proverbs and we have Psalms, but then these are all working together to give kind of one overarching picture. So I think kind of hitting those markers and then seeing how they all fit together was really helpful.
Do you think it's a challenge? And we use the word stories all the time.
Right.
We don't use it about the New Testament.
No.
We don't talk about stories in the New Testament, but we talk about stories in the Old Testament. You take Proverbs out, you take wisdom, or you take the Psalms out, and all of a sudden you got stories, which to me sound, you know, sometimes I think for some people they're like, well, it's like, let's tell the kids the stories. The story of Noah's Ark,
mm-hmm.
as if it's just some kind of a parable,
right.
Or just poetry, and it's not literal history. For me, it definitely helped to begin to understand, because I took a couple Old Testament classes here at Southeastern, not only the narrative in terms of pointing to Christ, which we'll get to, but understanding, okay, this is the, if I'm a New Testament Christian in 2018, this doesn't start in 2017.
Exactly.
This goes all the way back to the very beginning of everything. And so to me, it's more like a history book, but we say stories, and I think it's easy for us to kind of discount it, I guess.
Right. Right. It's basically more of like when we tell our story about here's where I came from, here's where, who my parents were. I think this is basically where we all fit into in our larger story.
Yeah.
Where did we come from? What has God been doing? And so it's just our story, but just in a book format already written.
Yeah. So we're going to go through that. We'll talk about that, kind of what's the proper New Testament perspective. We are going to talk about the brutality of the Old Testament, especially the brutality that was directed by God himself, killing women and children and all that kind of mess. What about the minutiae? All the little lists, all the little details. And so we don't do religion that way anymore. We'll get into all that when we come back. Welcome back. It's Theology Thursday on the Steve Noble Show, as it is virtually every week throughout the year. And Theology Thursdays we've been doing for about 4 years. That kind of started as I was working to finish up my master's in ethics here at Southeastern. And then having access to the type of teaching and the professors here and Danny Aiken, who's usually on once a month, but some lame excuse, his son's getting married this weekend or something. I don't know. But we let him off the hook today. And his intern happens to be here, who's no slouch himself. And Devin Mankato is here. And he is working on his Old Testament PhD, has his MDiv already here at Southeastern. So we're kind of working our way through the Old Testament. But like I mentioned earlier, if you kind of want to find out, and it doesn't matter if you're a Southern Baptist or not, it doesn't matter if you live in Raleigh, North Carolina, it doesn't matter if you live in North Carolina, it doesn't even matter if you live in North America. You can access a lot of that wisdom and knowledge and excellent teaching that's here at Southeastern. The website, the landing page you want to go to see really everything that's available to you without being a student here, is sebts.edu/radio, sebts.edu/radio, and you can check out all of that. And so that's why I approached Danny Aiken about 4 years ago and said, hey, I have this idea. I'd like for you guys to come on once a week. And he asked me why I want to do that. You know, Danny's so short in the way that he will address you sometimes.
Right.
Well, Steve, that's an interesting idea. Like, why do you want to do that? I'm just okay. Number one was... right now, there's several thousand people here on campus, but there's a whole load of people that don't access this information. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have more people access the incredible wisdom that's here and the teaching that's here. Number two, I wanted people to know about it. because especially here in North Carolina, and there's a college at Southeastern, a lot of people don't even know about it. And number three was totally selfish. I wanted to have access to that every Thursday myself. I was done taking my classes, and I don't want that to end. And it's just been a great partnership ever since. So we're talking to Devin today about the Old Testament and why do we need to get in there. And you mentioned the first kind of an Old Testament survey class that you took as an undergrad. Is that right?
An undergrad, yeah.
So how do we look at the Old Testament as New Testament Christians? We've got our salvation. We understand the cross. But as we look past the cross into the quote-unquote ancient history, how should we approach the Old Testament in terms of our New Testament Christianity?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as New Testament Christians, we believe in the Trinity, which is God the Father, Christ the Son, the Holy Spirit. And so I think if we are going to be full New Testament Christians, we have to say, okay, who is God the Father? Like, we believe God the Father, you know, creator of heaven and earth. That's what our creeds say. And so I think if we're going to be full Christians in the fullest sense, we're going to have to go and see God has been working way before, you know, Palestine where Jesus comes in, or Israel where Jesus comes in. And so he's been working for a long time with his people throughout a long period of history. And so if we want to fully know who that God is, I think we have to realize, let's read his scriptures that he's addressed to us. And it's more than just the letters. It's whole books that we don't always tap into.
Yeah. So there's the historical aspect mm-hmm. of it. Theologically speaking, if we're going to think in terms of salvation and then sanctification, mm-hmm. ultimately glorification, how do we kind of look at that to see the gospel in the Old Testament? And you and I were talking before the show started. Oftentimes, a lot of pastors, this seems to be pretty popular today. I don't remember this 15, 20 years ago. Seeing Jesus in the gospel all over the place in the Old Testament. So, whereas I appreciate that, and I think largely it's accurate, I don't think that most people think of that. We don't mm-hmm. really kind of we look at Jesus, we go back to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Matthew chapter 1. That's kind of the beginning.
Right.
There's 400 years before that, the intertestamental period. There's nothing, and then there's the Old Testament, and that's something totally different than Jesus. But how do we kind of look at the gospel in the Old Testament?
Yeah, and so, yeah, what we don't want to do is just, you know, open the Bible, point our finger, find a passage and say, okay, now where's Jesus in this?
Right,
it's just not going to work that way. And so what I like to point people to is to say, hey, all of this is one story that's leading to Christ. Kind of like you used to have those, maybe you still do have those gardens where there's like an opening in the center, but
yeah.
you can enter in from all different directions.
Got it.
No matter whatever direction you enter in, that path is eventually going to lead to God's interaction with us in Christ. And so as you're entering in through the Old Testament, you're going to find yourself in specific times talking about different people or different places. But if you trace those paths all the way to their fulfillment, all the way to their end, you're going to end up with Christ. And so I think really trying to figure out, where am I at in the story? Where is this going to lead to eventually? So if we're reading in Genesis, when Christ says when God says he's going to give Eve a seed that will come and will defeat Satan, it's like, okay, well, where are we going to follow that to? And we follow that yeah. all the way through the Old Testament. We're going to see Jesus towards the end of that. And so that's what I like to point people to, is not maybe finding Jesus under every rock, but at the end of the story, it's all being connected into yeah. one, you know, one grand design.
And what about kind of seeing our own salvation journey and what happened? If we follow God's chosen people, if we follow the Israelites, mm-hmm. if we follow the Jews and everything that they went through, shouldn't we be seeing ourselves in that journey as well?
Yeah, I think this is our story. You know, I think as Americans, it is hard to, because we're a little bit more individualistic. But when we come and look at the scriptures, like this is our people. That's why in the New Testament we talk about brothers and sisters. In the New Testament, it talks about we are children of Abraham. And so it's like, I'm a child of Abraham?
Well, yeah, and that's a great point, because why is Ancestry.com so popular now?
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
people have an interest in their ancestry. We think of that in terms of flesh and bone.
Yeah.
But we don't often think of that spiritually. I mentioned this earlier, all these kids that I teach on Thursdays, these young adults in high school. And one of the questions I asked, I just asked questions to take attendance. And one of the questions I asked them was, if you could figure out one thing, if you could ask Jesus, picks up a seat with you at Starbucks. He looks at his watch. He says, I've got 5 minutes. You get one question. Go. What would it be? And my question was, which disciple do I trace my salvation back to? So if I did that Ancestry.com for my salvation all uh-huh, the way
yeah.
back, which one of the disciples told this person, which told this person, which told this person, eventually got over here and eventually crossed the ocean and got over to North America, which eventually got to these three or four or five different people that were involved in me hearing the gospel and coming to faith. Shouldn't we look at it that way? I mean, you said it. Those aren't their people. Those are our people, spiritually
yeah.
speaking.
Yeah, exactly. I think when you come on the scene, Jesus, I mean, in the beginning of Matthew, you have the genealogy of Jesus' history. And so then now when we come, we are now sons of God. We're brothers with Christ. And so I think if we look at it as more than just, you know, physical blood, we are by faith related to all of these people in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, then I think we see that this is actually our history. This is our story. This is our lineage.
And what about the various types of writing in the Old Testament? Because you got a lot of different types of writing in there. Often we don't think of it that way. We just think it's one book. I go pick up a book by Stephen King. It's fiction. The whole thing's fiction. I go pick up a book about Bonhoeffer. It's biography and it's history. But you've got a little bit of everything in the Old Testament.
Yeah. I mean, if you go and you're reading the Exodus, all of a sudden you're having a narrative about what happened in the Exodus. And then in Exodus 15, all of a sudden Moses starts singing. And you're like, what's going on here? Why is he singing?
You're trying to put a backbeat to that.
Exactly.
That doesn't really work.
So, yeah. So we have everything from narratives to poems to proverbs to just history, just accounts of what's going on that just seem difficult, genealogies. So there's a lot more variation than what we do have in the New Testament.
All right, I just had one of these crazy questions come into my head. We got about a minute before we hit the break. So like 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles,
yeah,
which is just kind of a mirror image of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're reading that, that was always confusing to me. I'm like, if I'm going through it and if I'm doing like an audio one and it's bouncing back and forth and it's just like the record skipped, which you don't even know what that is because you're so young. But like, how do we look at something like that? Because sometimes the Old Testament, quite frankly, is confusing.
Right, right. Yeah, I think what you have to do is that nothing is going to be in there by accident. They're going to, even if it's the same material, a lot of times it's going to be either repeated for a particular reason. It's repeated for to emphasize a point that we're like, oh, hey, we don't always get things on the first try. We actually need to pay attention again. Or a lot of times they're going to repeat the story to emphasize something different. And so we're like, okay, what was the differences? I think the overall picture was the same, but maybe there was something different that's helping us to actually communicate something else.
Which is exactly what we experience when we go through the four Gospels.
Exactly. Exact same thing.
Yeah, and there's a great book out there called Cold Case Christianity that was written by a former atheist who's actually a cold case detective out in California. And he applies cold case detective work to the claims of the New Testament, and mm-hmm. especially the Gospels. And he's talking about if you show up at a crime scene and you talk to four different people and they all have the exact same story, you've got a problem on your hands.
Right.
It's a really interesting way to look at it. We're talking about the Old Testament. Oh, yes, some good aggressive rocking out music, even though it's Matt Papa who's a follower of Christ. But good aggressive rocking out music. Which is perfect because we're talking about the Old Testament, so we're going to start the blood and the guts and the heads and everything will start flying here in a couple minutes as we get into the brutality of the Old Testament. Just talking about the Old Testament in general, what's its value for us as New Testament Christians? Why study it? How to study it? What kind of fruit is there? So today we've got Devin Mankata with us who's here at Southeastern. He's working on his PhD in Old Testament studies, happens to be Danny Aiken's intern, which is not why you got this job.
This one?
This job, being here with me right now. I don't even know how you got this call today. I don't know.
I was approached and that's I'll do anything you want.
That sounds so kind of dark, doesn't it? I was approached. Sir, you're going to be on the show today. Anyway, talking about the Old Testament, and we were kind of in the middle of talking about how do we approach it and how do we study it properly and why study it properly. And you were talking about kind of getting your bearings was a phrase we were mm-hmm. just using off the air. And talking about a people and a place and a person because – and I'll use this example because I think it's helpful. I can go to any book in the New Testament. I can just grab that one particular book and read it, and mm-hmm. I don't need context outside of that for the most part. Right. I can read an epistle. I can read a letter from Paul. And within itself, it's going to make sense, and there's good teaching there. It's harder to do that in the Old Testament.
Right.
It's like dropping into the middle of a Stephen King novel or anybody else, a nonfiction, and you don't know who these characters are. You don't know where you're at in the story. So I think that's a great phrase, getting your bearings when you go into the Old Testament. And you mentioned people, place, and person. So explain mm-hmm. that. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, so I think these are three big themes that we see throughout the whole Old Testament that whatever you're going to go into, you can connect it to a people, a place, and a person. So like in the beginning of Genesis, we see that God is committed to creating a people for himself. That's the first thing we see is God creating man and then putting him in the garden, in the place. But then we see that doesn't last too long. Man chooses sin. But then even in the midst of sin, we see that there is this hope for a person that would come from Eve who would save the people and then bring them back to the place where God designed them to be, which is with him. And then so as we read throughout the rest of the Old Testament, we see that this people grows from a family to a nation. And then in the New Testament, we see that this is actually, the people is not just by birth, it's by faith. And all throughout the New Testament, all Old Testament as well, we see that the land goes from a garden to a promised land. But then at the end of Revelation, we're going back to the garden because we're actually, it's a new creation, new garden where God is. And as far as for the person, we see a person being promised from Eve, being a descendant of Abraham, somebody who's going to be along David's line that's going to last forever. And so we're asking all throughout the Old Testament, who is this person? Who is this person? And so Matthew comes on the scene and said, this person is Christ. And so I think all of those things are things that are building up to the New Testament. So we get the New Testament, it's like the end of the book or the end of the movie, but then everything has just been built up prior. Yeah. So if we want to understand the whole movie, or if we understand the whole play, we have to understand the first part and see how it's building up in that anticipation for all these
Got
things.
Got it. So as New Testament Christians, and we were talking about this earlier, we kind of can see how the gospel story and even Christ emerging eventually throughout the New Testament's all pointing to that. You know, with the old saying, the Old Testament looks forward to the cross, the New Testament looks back at the cross. We're all focused at the same thing. But the people in the Old Testament that we read about, whether you want to talk about the Davidic days or Solomon, you go back before that, and Abraham and those, Jacob and everybody else. How common was it for them to understand? If you go back to Genesis, that eventually there's this seed coming. There's this Messiah dude coming. And of course, when you get into – you can find it in the Psalms, obviously. Mm-hmm. And in some of the prophets where all of a sudden you're starting to see – because there's like what? Over 300 individual prophecies in the Old Testament that point to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so were they very aware of that? I've never really even thought about that much before. Like you drop into the Old Testament. Are those people thinking, oh, yeah, where's the Messiah? What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, by the time you get to the end of the Old Testament, for sure, there's this expectation that God is going to come. He's going to send his Messiah. And so it is hard as you're reading the early books, and God is slowly working out this plan.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not like Abraham is thinking, okay, hey, there's a Messiah. He's going to come. It's going to be on the cross. Everything we know, it's going to be his name's going to be Jesus Christ.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, so I think a lot of that, there is like this development about God, you know, slowly bringing his people along, slowly revealing what he's going to be doing. And so I think towards the end, I think we do see this full on expectation of the Messiah. It's like when Jesus comes on the scene, they're like, they're expecting it, but he's not what they expected.
Right. So, yeah. We're all good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all want it kind of our own way. All right. Let's talk about something that I don't think it's talked about enough, which is kind of the brutality, the murder, the mayhem, God having his people, whether you want to start reading in Joshua and going in and taking over the land and then kill everybody, women and children, all that stuff. How do we kind of process? Because that doesn't sound like, you know, the Lord of the New Testament. It doesn't sound like Jesus, although we know you go to Revelation and that gets pretty brutal at the end. But how do we kind of process and look through the brutality of the Old Testament?
Right. Yeah, that's an easy question, huh?
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. You got 30 seconds.
Right,
go.
Exactly. So, yeah, one thing I think just as a first principle, whenever we do approach something like that, something that's a difficult subject, is a lot of times we want easy answers,
yeah.
But sometimes easy, short answers aren't always actually the best answers. And so I think we want to realize, okay, hey, this is a difficult question. We're actually going to need to spend time doing this.
As you were becoming more interested in the Old Testament, was that an issue for you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, even the more I studied it, it's like, okay, now what do we do with this? I can't just, you know, read it. It's actually almost easier if you're just reading it once during, you know, your morning devotions. Like, well, I don't know what to do with that. Okay, let's go to the Psalms, and then we'll go to Paul.
Yeah,
afterwards.
I think if it doesn't bug you, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Go get them, Lord, bunch of scumbags. Yeah, smite them all.
Yeah. No,
yeah, this should make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so I think what we need to do is not separate it out from the whole picture. It'd be kind of like looking at one battle in a war and saying, oh, this was the whole war. This is all that happened. Or one inning or section of a sporting event. This was the whole game.
Yeah.
And so I think if we do that, then we get a skewed picture of what the whole thing is. It'd be like kind of somebody meeting you and just having one quality on one day. It's like, well, actually, do you know the whole person? Do you actually know who I am? And so I think when we're looking at the Old Testament is before we start talking about Joshua and all the conquest narratives, well, actually, Joshua's not the first book of the Bible. There's a whole story about what God has done. And so we see a God who is concerned with sin, not just in foreign people, but in his own people. So there's actually what I like to think about is there's actually more books about God punishing and treating sin in his own people than it actually is other people.
Yeah.
So the whole prophets is all about God dealing with his own people.
His own people.
So it's not, there is no partiality. He's concerned with sin in anybody, but he's also open to faith from anybody. So in Joshua, in the middle of the story and then after the story, we see God accepting those who repent and who follow him. So Rahab.
Yeah, perfect example.
In the beginning conquest, Rahab comes and says, your Lord is the Lord. And she's spared. And so it's not about ethnicity. It's not about just slaughtering for slaughtering's sake. It's like there are some difficulties in there, but it's like God is concerned with faith. And then afterwards, you have Ruth, who is a foreigner. And both of these women are part of the family tree of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so you see that God is very gracious. He's very open to people repenting, people always coming back, no matter what.
Well, I think that's a totally missed aspect of the Old Testament, where we'll put a huge spotlight on, and I'm not saying they're not difficult, but those passages here and there where there's destruction and death and putting people to death versus the overall arc of the Old Testament, which is this really unbelievable patience and care for people, all people, not just and then with the ones where that does happen, it's not like they had a bad month or a bad year. These are parts of the civilization that were increasingly wicked over a long period of time. It's kind of like we're talking about when the sin of the Gentiles gets to a certain point. And then that there's enough. But the whole, you go 300 years, 400 years, that was all patience.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then you see, especially in the prophets, God is committed to having not just Jews, but he's committed to having Gentiles coming. He's like, I want all of the nations. So when Jesus is saying, you know, make disciples of all nations, that's because the God of the Old Testament is concerned with all of the nations, not just his people. Otherwise, you know, we would be outside the land. We wouldn't have any hope at the end anyways. And so I think we do see, if we place Joshua, before we start talking about Joshua itself, we place it within the overall story and then where it ends up, we do see actually a very loving God. He's not just this, you know, angry God with a stick beating people on the side of the head. He's actually very loving, very patient. There are some difficulties for us as we wrestle through with those texts.
Sure.
I think we do have good answers, but yeah, I think we do see a very loving, patient
God.
Well,
people will, I mean, Christians will make a big deal and struggle over some of that death and destruction in the Old Testament. But they'll easily say, oh, yeah, those people are going to hell, which is this eternal torment, way worse than a brutal death early on. And they'll gloss over that and just say, oh, people are going to hell. You know, it's terrible. But then they'll get all wrapped up in the fact that you go into the narratives in Joshua where God's demanding that his people put people to death. And we put a big spotlight on that. We kind of overlook hell. And the eternal really is the big deal.
Right, right. I think there's a
lot. Which, again, I don't want to sound like I'm belittling the issue.
Right, right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of times that maybe there's more difficulties. We just kind of get used to giving some answers to you, but realize, okay, maybe there are a lot of difficulties. And maybe the answers, we have to think through some of our answers again. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting, and I would ask you your experience on this, when an unbeliever is bringing that up versus a Christian. With an unbeliever, I largely look at that as kind of an easy way to push the conversation away. It's an easy way to push away from the table. I'm doing that right now. I'm just pushing away from the microphone. I say, yeah, but that's a God that smites and kills and murders, and so I don't even want to talk about that God.
Right.
And I think most of the time, that's kind of a smokescreen to get away from it. Has that been your experience?
Actually, this is one of those questions I would love people to ask me. It's like, what do we do with the problem of evil? Or what do we do with these conquests in Joshua? Because at that point, it's a point for me to talk about the gospel. It's like, well, hey, actually, did you know that there was actually one person who was saved in the conquest of Jericho? Oh, let me tell you about that and how God delivered this prostitute woman because of her faith.
Yeah. And so you take that as an introduction. It's a good way to get onto the highway, which takes you to the gospel.
Yeah.
And you go from there. But don't let that be. Don't be afraid of that. And that's a good thing if you study it and spend some time getting into that. And we'll talk about a book that Devin recommends when we get into the last segment. But there's a lot of fruit there. And what about all the minutia on the list? We'll hit that next.
Yeah.
Welcome back. It's the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Talking to Devin Mankata, who is a PhD student. He's got his MDiv already. He's a PhD student. And is it technically Old Testament studies? Is that what we call that?
Just PhD Old Testament.
PhD Old Testament. Yeah. And what would you like to do when you graduate?
Yeah, so my ultimate goal, me and my wife would like to work with training pastors overseas. And so we would like to equip people to reach the people that they already know the language, they already know the culture, they can run before, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how to walk.
Right.
And so I would like to equip them and let them and set them loose. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome. We're talking about the Old Testament in general. We were just talking about kind of the brutality, the bloodletting, all the nastiness, if you want to call it that, in the Old Testament. And there was a book that you mentioned, Holy War in the Bible. I put a link up to it on our Facebook live feed today. So if you want to check that out, Holy War in the Bible, which takes you down all that road. I actually read that from one of my ethics classes here at Southeastern on War and Peace. It's an excellent book. It's an excellent resource. But it reminded me of a little quote by Richard Dawkins, one of the four horses of the apocalypse in terms of atheists that come after Christianity. And his description of the God of the Bible, I think, shows you what can happen when people don't understand the Old Testament at all. Here's what he said.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. jealous and proud of it, a petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully.
Okay, so that's Richard Dawkins' read on the God of the Bible, and largely it sounds almost exclusively like all he does is spend his time reading three or four chapters in the Old Testament. But what's your reaction when we hear an attack like that on the God of the Bible, your Lord, my Lord, from that perspective?
Yeah, I think it's easy to just kind of wash over all of the whole story. I think it's easy just this picking and choosing.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of like proofreading, proof texting, just different points of the Bible just to prove your points. And so I think, okay, hey, we're not understanding the story. It'd be like going into any novel, ripping out chapters and saying, okay, here's what this story's about. Like, well, you actually, you know, you ripped out 300 pages. It could be
right.
anything, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah. And you got to understand he's doing that for a reason. But yeah, he wants to justify his rebellion, and he's playing to the crowd. So he's going to make it as salacious as he possibly can and try to make it easy to reject the God that you know exists. There's nothing. If you're going to read the Bible, if you read Romans chapter 1, I don't believe in atheists. There is no such thing as an atheist because God's words makes it plain in Romans 1 that there is no such thing as an atheist because God's made it plain so that nobody's got an excuse. And so an atheist to me is just an agnostic with a bit of an attitude problem. And that's what what we just heard of that quote. Now, let's turn the corner and talk about something that I think a lot of people struggle with is I use the word minutia. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of lists. There's a lot of genealogy. There's a lot of details in the Old Testament and not just the ceremonial law. And here's how I want my temple built. And here's how I want the curtains. And here's how I want the showbread table and all of that. But what do we do with the minutia? Why is it in there?
Yeah. That's a good question. And so I think two things first off, just kind of set up when we're talking about these lists and these endless, almost seems endless. You've never read anything longer, it seems like, when you get to the genealogies, is that one, I mean, we see a God who cares about details. Like he's writing to us. He cares about giving details to his people. It'd be really bad if he told Noah, hey, go build an ark. I don't really care how you do it. I don't really care about those details. I don't even give you a plan.
Just figure it out.
Like, that's not as helpful as being, here's a plan. Here's how I can help you figure this out. And so when we see these genealogies, when we see these lists and these chronicles, I think we're like, man, okay, actually, this is helpful. All these laws, all things, even though if I don't understand it right away, I'm actually glad that there's a God who cares enough to even write and give details and figure out how can we live as a people.
So is that pretty much what we pull out of that is that God is a God of detail and specificity?
not just that. He's not a type A. He's just a type A person. Yeah.
Right.
No, I think each different type of detail, whether it's a genealogy, whether it's how to build the temple, each of those is going to have its own particular reason for being there. And so if we take the genealogies, for example, you know, it's okay if we're reading this and we don't have a direct application to our life.
Right.
I think we just have to set up.
Thanks for that. Because yeah. I think a lot of times, I mean, I mentioned this earlier, I'm going through an audio version of the Bible in a year and I'm still in the Old Testament. I'm like, oh, when's Matthew going to get here?
Right.
I'll get down to that little cursor and I'll speed it up and get past the list and get past the minutia. And I know it's there. I know why it's there. I just don't spend a lot of time on that. And I often sit there and wonder, what's the Lord thinking of me right now? You just skip it over.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. No. I definitely understand that. I've done that before and sometimes you still do it. So because I think – I think if we're patient and we're saying, okay, hey, there is something here and we don't have to, you know, I understand you are not a holier person if you read the genealogies only or every single time you sit down and read your Bible. It's like, it's okay to read them once, you understand them, even go back through them periodically because we are New Testament believers. We do have the Bible. We do have the letters of Paul and those are good things and vital for the church. And so we don't have to spend every moment on these details. But I think having somebody, books, some other resources, pastors, other people who have kind of worked through it before kind of say, okay, what are we doing with this? And so in the genealogies, for example, if you realize, man, God is concerned with a person and a person who will redeem his people, then you understand that, oh, the genealogies in the Old Testament are just like the genealogy in Matthew.
Yeah.
You know, it's leading up to somewhere. And so
– you do have a place and a very big story.
Right, exactly.
And your place is important because you remove one of those links, you have a problem.
Right, exactly.
So every single person has a place in the story. It's all relevant. It all matters. So when I read that, I'm sitting there going, you know, I'm in a genealogy somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if God's going to include it in the Bible – and by the way, the only thing Jesus could quote was the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Then to me, I'm like, that personalized it for me.
Mm-hmm.
You got all these lists of individuals, and I'm thinking, well, I'm no Billy Graham, and I'm no Danny Aiken, I'm no this, I'm no mm-hmm. that. But you still matter, and you matter enough to die for.
Right. Yeah, and that's actually my son's name is actually somebody who's in a list of one of David's mighty men. His name is Ira. And we're actually, this cool. is actually somebody who you don't know any much about him, but that's, he's a mighty man of, and he was a faithful warrior for David. Yeah. And so that's where we got his name out of. It's one of the genealogies. Yeah. Maybe if anything else, we'll get a good kid's name out of it.
Yeah, that's so cool. But so how do we give us some kind of tips on how to properly study it? If we're going to dive in and get serious about it and try to spend some time in there and pull the fruit off the tree. You mentioned a book by Sandra Richter called Epic of Eden. So mm-hmm. just give us some, we got about 4 minutes left. Just give us some pointers on how we should enter into a good relationship with the Old Testament.
Yeah. Yeah. So Sandra Richter's book, Dr. Richter, her book is excellent because it's an introduction to all the pieces of the Old Testament. She's going to kind of give you the overall story, overall workings, give you your boundaries, and then show you how do we fit these things together. And so I think one of the things that she brings out into this book, one of the things that's helpful is realizing that these are real people in real time with particular ways they write things. So whereas in the New Testament, people are focused on writing letters. But in the Old Testament, they're actually doing something different. This is a particular way people used to write. They used to emphasize things. They used to repeat whole lists of things just so they could communicate a point.
Yeah.
And so if we approach it in that way, we realize, oh, this is not just, you know, minutia. This is actually a style of writing people used to do. And it may be different, but it's actually, there's actually maybe something valuable to it. Kind of like trying new food. This mm-hmm. may not be what I'm used to, but I'm going to try it and see what's yeah. valuable in it. And then I think asking, one of the big questions we can ask is, why is this here? You know, at the end of the day, I may not know who this person is, why they're in this list, but what is this list doing? What is all of these laws? You know, if you're going to go through the book of Leviticus, you know, I could spend time in each law, but if I look at the whole picture, like, what is this for?
Yeah.
And then you see that, oh, it's a God who cares about how his people live. You see it's a God who wants his people to follow him and separate them as a separate holy people. And so I think if we take a step back and ask, why is this here? What does this actually teach me? What does it actually show me? How does this fit into the other parts? And because a lot of times we will kind of go through the genealogy, but then not realize, oh, well, this is, you know, the chapter before and chapter after, it's kind of placed in there for a reason. What's that reason? Why might this be here? And so I think if we're just asking those kind of
And I think those are very logical questions as yeah. you go through it.
Yeah, I think it's these big questions because a lot of times it's the details that scare us and then we get too focused on that we forget to ask yeah. the big questions.
And I think, like, let's take up a modern topic, kind of casual church that we have today. I think some of that might be a testament to the fact that we've largely disassociated ourselves from the Old Testament, which mm-hmm. made a very big deal out of how do you worship God.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not casual.
Mm-hmm.
If you do church casual in the Old Testament, you're dead.
Right.
Right? And you could be the president of the Southern Baptist. I don't care who you are.
Mm-hmm.
The Pope, you go in there and screw it up, you're mm-hmm. dead. And I think we've lost some of that.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go, well, that's stylistic. It's Western culture. Let's not get all wrapped up in that. And I'm not being a Pharisee there. I'm just talking about the Old Testament clearly points to reverential worship and awe of God. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes in the modern church, mm-hmm. we don't think like that at all.
Right, 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 right. Yeah, and I think as you're reading the Old Testament, I think you do see there are things that it teaches you about God that aren't not necessarily fully developed, that just aren't as emphasized in the New Testament. So this idea of this reverential awe of God, this power of God yeah. over all creation, constantly showing his works in miraculous ways. I think we'd see bits and pieces of that in the New Testament. I think you see this, you get more of the character of God as well, fully developed in the Old Testament.
So what would be, we got about a minute, what yeah. would be your final encouragement to people to begin to spend more time studying the Old Testament?
Yeah, so I think patience. Patience is the key. I think just being comfortable just sitting there and reading, saying, okay, hey, I'm going to read this, I'm going to understand, praying for God to give you insights and give you wisdom and realizing, hey, I may not every day I may not have any kind of sudden change, kind of like eating. You may not grow, you know, an inch that day, but
yeah.
eventually you become a healthy person overall. And so I think as we spend time in the Old Testament, you will become a healthier and healthier believer because you become to know the God who's addressed you there.
And is there a particular order you would suggest if somebody's going, all right, I'm going to get serious. The book you mentioned, Epic of Eden
yeah.
by Sandra Richter. But Should you start in Genesis and work your way through?
I would say start in Genesis. Start in those narratives that we're familiar with. Don't go straight to the hard parts.
Yeah.
Start where we're familiar. Start in Psalms and Proverbs, and then get your bearings, and then now start working out to those outer banks.
Awesome. Great advice and great input. Devin Mankata, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. It's great that we get a chance to talk about the Old Testament. That kind of gets skipped over a lot. So a really great blessing that you're here today. We'll be back tomorrow, friends. It'll be a busy day tomorrow. I got a lot of stuff happening in the news that I haven't talked about this week, but we'll definitely get to it tomorrow. So God willing, I'll talk to you then. And like my dad always said, ever forward.